Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm very glad you're with me. You know what? Because I would suffer the embarrassment of orofacial granulomatosis if I came to learn that you had missed today's show. Your matching gift program. Adam Weinger is president of Double the Donation. He's got great ideas about marketing, about starting or scaling your matching gift program. We'll talk about who should manage it, low-effort marketing, best processes, and more. And your board on grants. I'll welcome our newest contributor, Cindy Gibson. She's the principal of Synthesis Consulting, and she will be with us monthly, sharing her expertise on grants fundraising. To kick us off this month, your board's role in the grants process. Between the guests on Tony's Take Two, what I love about planned giving. We are sponsored by, and I'm very thankful for, Generosity Series. Very thankful, very grateful and thankful for their sponsorship. And I'll say more about Generosity Series shortly. And it feels very good to be back in the studio. Haven't been live and in the studio for a few weeks. Feels good. Good to be back live. And of course, we'll have live listener love throughout the show. I'm very pleased that Adam Weinger is with us. He's the president of Double the Donation, providing tools to nonprofits across North America and Europe to help them raise money from employee matching gift programs. Double the Donation was recently named one of the top 10 startups in Atlanta. They're at doublethedonation.com, and Adam is at 2xDonations on Twitter. Adam Weinger, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony, for having me.
It's my pleasure. You okay there?
Yes.
Okay. There you are. You sound a little better now. Matching gifts. This is the first time we've talked about matching gifts on the show. I'm glad you you brought the topic to me. How important are they to fundraising?
You know, they're one of the areas of fundraising that is often overlooked by nonprofits. Annual fund giving is often a top priority. Major gifts is often a top priority. And matching gifts are kind of some bonus money that's out there for organizations that can impact their budgets, but just aren't always being thought about and focused on by nonprofits.
Yeah, often an afterthought. Well, what are some of the numbers? Why give us some motivation for being more thoughtful about our matching gift program?
Across the United States, there's probably a few billion dollars annually that's donated from corporations through their employee matching gift programs, which is a substantial amount. But at the same time, a lot of nonprofits just aren't focusing on it and aren't really thinking about it and aren't promoting employee matching gifts to their donors.
Yeah, I think there's a concern that it's kind of burdensome, maybe a little paperwork intensive. People don't really know how to get started with it, so you know we're gonna try to dispel some of those myths. This all started with General Electric, right? In 1954, was that the first matching gift program?
Yes. So we're actually hitting the 60-year anniversary of the first employee matching gift program. So a gentleman named Philip Reed, who at one point was the chairman of General Electric, conceptualized the idea of a matching gift program as a way to really inspire General Electric employees to give back. And their program started focusing out on higher education, but has since expanded to match employee donations to pretty much any 501c3 organization.
Are matching gift programs only part of employment if you're at a very big company, or does it trickle down to smaller size organizations? I don't know.
You know, there's definitely a bias towards larger corporations. Mm-hmm. So the General Electrics, the IBMs, the Verizon, Bank of Americas of the world. But we also, within our own database, track small companies who have employee matching gift programs. I know I was recently contacted by an individual who runs a peanut butter manufacturing company and he has 13 employees and was looking to start up a matching gift program.
Oh, okay.
So while they're predominantly at larger companies, definitely a lot of smaller companies offer them as well.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that peanut butter company could have been Kraft, but with 13 employees, that's a pretty small business.
Yeah.
Do you know the average matching gift donation to charities? Do we know that?
So we know a lot of data on kind of the minimums and maximums that are out there. So if I were to kind of ballpark the average minimum, I would say companies match donations starting at $25 mm-hmm. up to oftentimes a few thousand dollars. So the maximums range between $1,000 and $15,000 annually per an employee.
Okay.
But in terms of the actual amount that gets matched, it's highly dependent on the organization's donor. So is an organization's donor base made up of a lot of small donors or some larger donors?
Mm. Is it common for a company to have a cap on annual matching gifts for an employee?
Definitely. So almost every company with a matching gift program does have a cap per an employee, and that range is typically between $1,000 and $15,000, but we do see caps ranging as high as $50,000, or there's even one company out there which matches up to $300,000 annually.
Okay. What company is that, $300,000?
It's Soros Fund Management.
Okay. I guess not too surprising. It's in financial services. Okay. Is there a way, I'm sure there is, how would someone know what companies participate in matching gifts?
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple different ways. The first is just encouraging an organization's donors to check with their HR department. So we see a lot of small nonprofits really taking that approach, is including that recommendation in emails and acknowledgement letters. And then really just a Google search. You'll see a lot of lists of companies out there. They may not be 100% accurate, but they're a good starting spot. And then also on our website, we provide some free lists with detailed information on some companies, as well as a searchable database of companies that match employee donations.
Okay. I was going to ask you if one of the sources is more reliable than others, but I guess Double the Donations is the most reliable.
Definitely. I mean, it really goes to the core of our business is maintaining a database of companies that match employee donations.
Okay. What are the basics of matching gift program? If an organization is, and of course our listeners are in small and mid-sized shops, so that's why I think this topic is perfect, because they may not be paying enough attention, as you suggested, to a matching gift program. What are the basics of it?
So when you look at each company's guidelines, they have a few different standard elements of their matching gift programs. The first one is really who's eligible. So is it only open to full-time employees or are part-time employees eligible as well? Or are retirees eligible? And in many cases, retirees are. The second element is which nonprofits are eligible. So is it all 501c3 organizations or just certain types such as arts and cultural or civic and community organizations? The third element is how much will a company match, so those minimums and maximums. And then the fourth element is really the submission process.
Okay. Is it common for companies to restrict the type of charitable mission that they'll give to? You see that a lot?
It depends. In about 60 or 70% of cases, companies will match to pretty much any 501c3 organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the remaining cases, companies do restrict it to certain types of organizations.
Well, that's interesting. And are they restricting it by charitable mission or by geography or it varies? What do you see?
It does vary. Typically, it's by kind of charitable mission. They'll either restrict it to education, arts and cultural organizations, civic and community organizations, environmental organizations. There's a few different broad categories. But in most cases, companies do match employee donations to nonprofits based around the country.
Yeah.
But it is typically North America nonprofits or nonprofits in the U.S.
Okay. All right. We have to go away for a couple seconds. When we come back, of course, Adam and I are going to continue talking about your matching gift program. So hang in there with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you need a business plan that can guide your company's growth? Covenant 7 will help bring the changes you need. We are small business consultants, and we pay attention to the details you may miss. Our coaching and consultant services are guaranteed to lead to right growth for your business. Call us at 917-833-4860 for a no-obligation free consultation. Check out our website at www.covenant7.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. We've got live listener love, and how glad I am that I can send live love being back here in the studio. Ellensburg, Virginia, Atlanta, Georgia, Salt Lake City, Utah. Live listener love to you. Let's go abroad. In China, Nanjing, Ni Hao. Also, we've got Sakai, Tokyo, and Kutakyushi, Japan. Konnichiwa. I hope I said the name of your city correctly. It's not your last name, so I don't feel as bad. I'm not getting a person's name wrong. It's a city, although I do try with cities too, but I don't feel as bad as if it was a person. Any case, konnichiwa to our Japanese listeners. And of course, to those 9,000 listening in the podcast, whether you're on the subway, on a treadmill, in a car, maybe you're at your office, maybe you're supposed to be listening to your kids, podcast pleasantries to all our podcast listeners. Adam Weinger, he's president of Double the Donation. We're talking about your matching gift program. Adam, if an organization is not currently doing much or maybe doing nothing with matching gifts, how do they get started?
I think the first step is figuring out who at an organization is responsible for matching gifts. We talk to organizations all of the time where they're doing very little. But the big problem is the organization doesn't even know who's responsible. So I think that first step is figuring out, well, does it fall to an annual fund director? Does it fall to someone from the corporate giving team? Or should it be a volunteer's responsibility?
Okay. Now, in an organization that has the luxury of choosing from those, and a lot of organizations don't, it might just be two or three people, and one person is devoted to everything fundraising, so it would be clear where it falls for them. But for an organization that has that luxury, where do you like to see the matching gift responsibility?
We always recommend that it falls under the annual fund, just because they manage a large number of communications that go out to their donors. So we think it's a good fit in the annual fund department, and the data that we've seen shows that that's where it falls in most organizations.
Okay. All right, so once we've decided who's in charge of it, what do we do next?
The first step is really evaluating how the organization is currently promoting matching gifts. So looking through the organization's website and seeing if there's any wording of any kind that even references matching gifts. Looking through the acknowledgement letters that go out after someone makes a donation and seeing what those say. Are they prompting donors to think about matching gifts? So our recommendation is kind of evaluate your organization's current marketing and see where there are opportunities to incorporate matching gift wording.
Okay. What kind of matching gift messages do you like to see? I mean, you had said earlier something as simple as asking donors to find out from their employers if they have a matching gift program. What other marketing do you recommend?
Right. At the bare minimum, we think organizations should be saying, check with your HR department.
Okay. That's the least you should be doing.
Yes. And then as you move up kind of in your matching gift sophistication, starting to share examples with your donors. So if your nonprofit is based in Atlanta, sharing examples about Coca-Cola's matching gift program and Home Depot's matching gift program. So that way you're familiarizing your donors with what they are and how they work.
Hmm. And when you say share the details, what would you be sharing?
Just a paragraph on a few different companies. So if you're sending out a matching gift email to all of your donors, you want to say, did you know many companies offer an employee matching gift program? For instance, Home Depot will match employee donations up to $1,000 per year per an organization, and you can submit your matching gift online. So just something very, very simple. That shares a few additional details about one or two companies.
Hmm. So you see, or you're recommending some communications that are devoted to matching gifts, or you're suggesting you see this as part of an annual fund appeal or some other appeal?
I think it varies. An end of the year email to all of an organization's donors is pretty valuable and easy to send. And then I also think that matching gifts should be incorporated into kind of the ongoing messaging that goes out. So in a tax receipt letter that is sent to a donor after they make a donation, that's a great spot to kind of change the organization's template that they're using to highlight matching gifts.
Do you get frustrated at all because matching gifts is sort of a, like you had said, a stepchild or an afterthought. Does this cause you personal frustration much?
Not really. I mean, it makes sense. Matching gifts are never going to represent 50% of an organization's fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely don't get frustrated by it. I look at all of the opportunities for organizations to make small changes in what they're doing. That can be very impactful.
Hmm. Okay. You got a better outlook than I do. I get frustrated at planned giving because I do planned giving consulting is often a stepchild. You know, I don't, and it has great potential as matching gift programs do. But I get a little frustrated sometimes. But I see it as an opportunity too to help evangelize and spread the word. Pardon me? Go ahead.
Sorry, Tony. I guess I do get a little frustrated when, you know, we're talking with larger organizations, and there's such easy wins out there, and that there's small changes that an organization can make that would be very impactful, but for whatever reason, they're not making those changes.
There you
so
go.
It's disappointing to see that in some cases.
It's okay to share a little frustration. You know, it's not like I think you're going to be shooting people's heads off or anything over it, but it's okay to, you know, have a little frustration. That's okay. It's an opportunity. What are some of those small changes? And maybe you've already mentioned them, but you've mentioned them just now. You said them a couple times. Small changes that organizations can make to have a big impact. What are some of those small changes?
Mm-hmm. It's really two things. The first is having no one being responsible for a matching gift effort at an organization.
Yeah. Okay.
We hear from organizations that sometimes when a donor submits a matching gift form, no one is even verifying the the donation, and it's going on claim. It's because of that. So having a point of contact at the organization is important, and working through the marketing efforts.
Okay. Now, we're getting into the nuts and bolts a little bit, which is very good. You said validating the no one's validating the donation. How does that work in the program?
So there's a couple steps for when a donor submits a matching gift. The first is that the donor needs to tell their company that they made a donation to an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to Home Depot, let's say your organization has a donor who works for Home Depot. They made a $250 donation to your organization. The donor needs to log into Home Depot's matching gift website with their employee username and password and register the fact that they made a donation. And then Home Depot will mail you a letter or send you an email to the nonprofit asking nonprofit to verify that, in fact, the donor did make a donation.
Oh, and then sometimes these emails or other communications go unanswered, and then the money is left on the table?
Yes. So if a nonprofit doesn't respond to the emails or to the letters, the company cannot verify that the donation was actually made. And we hear about that from organizations on a somewhat regular basis, that they were reviewing past donations and realized that a lot of the match-eligible donations never actually got claimed.
Oh, my goodness. I would have thought that would just be done as a matter of course, but you're saying since nobody's in charge of it, it falls between the cracks and money's left on the table.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Huh. Okay. All right. All right, so let's go back to getting started. We've identified who's in charge, and we're thinking about marketing now. What else do we need to be doing to get this program going?
Those are really the core. For a lot of small nonprofits, because I know a lot of your listeners do fall onto the smaller side,
mm-hmm.
My recommendation is find a volunteer who's very organized, who you can really delegate your match and gift efforts to. Someone who may not have the means to donate large amounts of money but wants to support your organization can really improve your match and gift efforts. Just by being focused on that. So looking through an organization's high-value donors, figuring out where they work, and reaching out to them to see if they're eligible to submit a matching gift.
Okay, so this is something that we should be comfortable delegating to a volunteer in a smaller organization, yeah?
100%, especially if an organization doesn't have the staff to focus on matching gifts. It's an area of fundraising that can be delegated to a volunteer.
Hmm. Okay. Let's explore the marketing a little more. Do you have a preference for channels? Email over direct mail, over social networks?
So email is obviously a very affordable channel for a nonprofit to market matching gifts. We do see some organizations that use direct mail, but what we always recommend organizations think about is kind of the cost per piece to send a letter, and if they're going to use direct mail, to only send matching gift forms and guidelines and communications out to some of their higher-end donors. So don't send a paper letter to a donor who made a $20 donation.
Mm-hmm.
An organization just won't see the ROI on that.
Okay. Higher dollar donors. Other message, you had suggested making this a part of the acknowledgement letter. That sounds like a very good idea too. I mean, it's a perfect time for the gift has already been made and you're now saying thank you. Seems like a perfect time to think about have the donor think about a matching gift possibility.
Definitely in the acknowledgement letter and the tax receipt letter that goes out and any acknowledgement emails. And then you had actually mentioned social media, and we see a lot of organizations promoting Matching Gifts on social media, when they receive a check from a company, they're sometimes taking a picture of the check and posting it to social media as a way to encourage other donors to think about matching gifts.
Oh, yeah, cool. Now you got this visual. It encourages the program. You could put that on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook even. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's a really simple thing to do. Take a picture of a check, and it's a simple post.
And we have a variety of graphics and images on our website as well that nonprofits are welcome to use to share across different social media networks.
Oh, do they have to be working with Double the Donation to take advantage of that?
They don't. We have just a variety of free graphics because we know there's a lot of smaller organizations out there who may not be ready to sign up for Double the Donation service but can still benefit from some of the graphics that we've created, as well as our entire marketing toolkit, which really has suggestions and examples for organizations.
Oh, excellent. That's very generous. Very good, Adam. Very good. Of course, that's doublethedonation.com, since they're so gracious. We'll give them another shout. Do you have...
Yes, and if people go to our website, they can actually access those marketing materials down in the footer. It's the last link in the bottom of our webpage under the section Resources. It's called Matching Gift Marketing Materials.
Outstanding. Excellent. You have a little a case story of an organization that you saw turn things around and make a substantial difference in their fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, we hear from a lot of organizations that we work with a lot of very positive feedback. So the Lazarus Cancer Foundation, which is out in California, signed up with our service, I believe it was back in December of 2012, and wasn't doing a whole lot to promote matching gifts. And they really implemented a number of our strategies. It's across multiple of their fundraising websites. It's across all of their communication strategies. And, you know, we've seen some of the different figures on how much they're bringing in now for matching gifts versus previously. And there's been a substantial increase. I don't want to share the exact figures because I don't have their permission. But we hear a lot of great feedback from organizations who make simple changes.
Okay. We have a question from Lynette Singleton. She's a big fan of the show, and she's live tweeting the show. And you can follow her tweets at using the hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Lynette, thank you very much for tweeting. Very grateful is the word I'm looking for. Very grateful when you're able to do that. Thanks for joining us. And she has a question. Adam, what about you saying something on the online donation page?
It's a great spot to promote matching gifts. We see a lot of organizations who either have a line on the online donation page that says, you know, check to see if your company will match your donation. Other organizations ask for a company name and then pass that name along to the individual who's responsible for the organization's matching gift efforts, so that way they can look up that employer. And then other organizations who subscribe to our service actually include a link to a searchable database of companies with matching gift programs. So they empower their donors to access forms and guidelines and company-specific information directly while making a donation.
We have to leave it there. Adam Weinger is president of Double the Donation. They're at doublethedonation.com. You'll find him on Twitter at 2xdonations. Adam, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you. Matching gifts, of course, excellent way to raise money, but so is a 5K run or walk. And Generosity Series hosts multi-charity, peer-to-peer runs and walks. I emceed their 5K run walk in Brooklyn a couple of weeks ago. It was great fun, raised a lot of money for 10 charities that were there. Generosity Series does the back-end work from T-shirts, race bibs, finisher medals. They have professional chip timing. They take care of getting the permits and licenses that are needed. They take care of getting the portable restrooms and the fluid stations on the course. They photography, videography, they take care of all this back end, and also provide each of their charity partners with customized web pages for your charity and also, of course, for your participants, so for their fundraising. And Generosity Series has a charity support team, which helps you with your team building and your fundraising. That charity support team is there to help you. They are at generosityseries.com. They have events coming up in New Jersey, Florida, Atlanta, New York City, Philadelphia, Toronto. You can just pick up the phone. You know, I've heard me say this before for other sponsors. Why not just pick up the phone and talk to the person, have a conversation? You would talk there at Generosity Series to Dave Lynn, L-I-N-N. He's the COO. They are at 718-506-9777. 718-506-9777. Just talk to them. See what they're about and how they can help you and how you can become a part of one of these multi-charity events that they host throughout the country. And last week, I called them so erroneously, this is terrible, Generation Series. So I apologize for that. It is not Generation Series. That was, if I had an intern, then the intern would have written out the name Generosity Series, and I would not have abbreviated it last week, G-E-N. So I blame the intern that I don't have. Since I don't have an intern to blame, I blame the one that I don't have, because it's clearly not my mistake. Generosity Series is our sponsor. Working with our elders, those who are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, it is what I love about doing planned giving work. I've been doing planned giving for 17 years, 11 years in my own business, and I love working with older Americans. They have this peace about them and this comfort that is just an ease. You know, they're not thinking about business development and social networking. That stuff is, well, social networking is to some of them very foreign, or they're just basically just scratching the surface of it. And business development, that is like decades old for them. And this just leaves them with a harmony and a peace. And I just love that. And it's what I really love about planned giving. And I say more about that on my blog. There's a video on my blog where I go into a tiny bit more detail about why I love working with our elders. That is at TonyMartinetti.com. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 25th of April, 17th show of this year. I am very glad that we have a new monthly contributor. Her name is Cindy Gibson. Welcome, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. She's our newest contributor. She's going to be covering grants fundraising month to month. She's our pracademic. She has her PhD and over 25 years of experience with nonprofits. She's had leadership roles for several national foundations and nonprofits, so she's been on both sides of grantsmanship. She was a Nonprofit Times Top 50 Power and Influencer. Cindy is principal of Synthesis Consulting. You'll find her on Twitter at Cingib, C-I-N-G-I-B, and Synthesis Consulting is C-Y-N. T-H-E-S-I-S. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're able to be in the studio first time.
I'm happy to be here. It's exciting.
You're going to be usually calling in from Boston, right?
Indeed.
Okay.
Oh, can I say something about matching gifts?
You certainly
can.
You
just covered that.
Yes.
Just a little tip for your listeners. You might not know this, but if all of you listeners, if you have a friend who works in a foundation, a lot of foundations give 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 matching contributions for their employees who have a favorite nonprofit and want to give a contribution, they can submit it to their office in the foundation and they'll give you a match.
Excellent. Adam didn't mention foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Excellent. We want to talk about the board's role in grants fundraising. She just rolled her eyes incredibly. All right, so I just got, why is that big eye roll? What are you seeing in boards or not seeing in boards?
Well, I think it's funny because everybody always, that's like the standard topic. How can your board help you fundraise?
Yes.
And as any good fundraiser will tell you, it's sometimes a Sisyphean task to get your board involved. And grants are no exception. And so while we all love our board members, it's always an ongoing slog to try to get them to appreciate their role in fundraising.
And so a lot of what we're going to talk about spills over to all different kinds of fundraising,
sure.
but we're going to tap your expertise on in grantsmanship specifically, to the extent that there's something specific to grants. But yes, we have had guests urging, imploring, beseeching nonprofits to do more with their board.
Yeah.
All right. How do you suggest we get started? What should we be saying at our next board meeting or before?
Or before. So, we all know it's relational. How many times can we say that? It is. But I say this all the time, and I've sat on boards and I've watched boards and I've funded big intermediaries that do this kind of capacity building. And they all say that you really have to work on building a culture of philanthropy on your board. And what that means is it goes beyond, you know, the development director or the executive director coming into a meeting and saying, hey, board members, who do you know at this foundation? Or, you know, who do you know, the trustees? Do you know the president? Which is great if they know them.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to go beyond that. It has to go beyond, okay, how do you know them? Are you willing to reach out to them? How are you willing to reach out to them? Is it a letter? What is your role in getting to them? So it goes beyond just sitting around and saying to a board, hey, give us the names. And I've watched board members at these meetings literally throw pieces of paper at the development director, and there's no time at all to sit with them and strategize. You know, you really need to have the strategy with them.
Like, just, well, okay, here's, I identified, I named a name, or I checked a name off on a list. You take it from here.
Right. And I've seen that. And then development directors or executive directors walk away, and then they're very frustrated because they don't know what the relationship is, and they don't know how willing the board member is to follow up on it. So the more you can get the board members, and in my opinion, devote time at every board meeting to do this process, to not just say, okay, board members, write them all down, but okay, let's have a discussion then. You know, an hour or so, and all brainstorm about how each of these board members and their contacts can move this forward together. Every strategy is going to be different for every funder, as we know. So the third step of that is prioritizing. Which ones do you think are the most promising relationships that the board members have identified with foundations or otherwise? And which ones are we going to concentrate on? And then finally, what the next steps? What are we going to do? You know, really codify it. So.
Okay, so you've given us a lot there. Well, that's okay. we have time to unpack.
I'm trying to talk fast.
Okay, do we have 25 minutes? No. You don't need to, and there'll be other months too. You're coming back, so we can always continue. I've done with contributors before, so it's not a problem. In terms of prioritizing, let's take the step back before that. You want to see this at every meeting. And then a discussion around strategy, just like we do with individual fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't necessarily do it at a board meeting, although we may too as well. We strategize about individuals all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the best? Okay, we've identified who's the best person. How are we going to reach? When? Do we have something coming up that they should be invited to, or should it be more a one-to-one? Should we just be engaging them in our communications? Go ahead. I just threw out three things. But
there's all kinds of ways, and I think that's the big challenge with boards. People come on boards and they think, ugh, I'm going to be asked to fundraise. You know, and you really have to sort of give them a set of options like you just did very well. But I can't stress enough, you made the remark about it doesn't have to be at the board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I found that it really needs to be. That's part of the culture thing that I'm talking about. Literally setting aside that time in a meeting and making sure everybody's sitting there and that's what they're focused on, for a period of time, almost ingrains a sense of value into the exercise. And then it makes people automatically think, oh, I'm going to this board meeting. I'm going to have to start thinking about it. And then I'm going to have to start. And actually, you know, at the end of these sessions, if you have time to go around the room and say to each board member, how are you going to follow up on this contact that you just gave me? Saying it out loud in front of your peers, there's some sort of contract there. And you can go, and people are taking notes, you can go back and say, well, you said you did this.
Okay. So you want to see it a regular part of the agenda?
I do.
And it's adding gravitas to the whole conversation, because you've said, like you said,
right. You've
said it in front of people and...
Mm-hmm.
And you've got you've walking away with some responsibility and a meaningful responsibility for a board member.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In terms of the prioritizing you mentioned, a lot of people, I think, get one-off requests from board members, could even sometimes, even worse, I come from the executive director or CEO. Look at this grant that so-and-so got. Well, we do that kind of work. Send them a proposal. What do you do with that? Those kinds of one-off requests, which cannot, you know, sometimes are not so infrequent.
They're not infrequent. And yeah. That gets to the prioritizing thing. You're right. I mean, you can go around the room and talk to your board members and you will always hear, there's always one board member that will say, at least one, I know somebody at the Gates Foundation, or I know somebody at the Hewlett Foundation, which are huge foundations. And while it's actually really good to have someone on your board who knows somebody there, when you start to dig down with them, it may not be somebody that's really the direct conduit or somebody who can really move things at that foundation. And that's what I mean about, so that to me, that's not a priority right now. Down the road, sure. You know, give that board member time to get to that person, write a couple emails, maybe go out to lunch, test that relationship out to see if it's worth pursuing. It's the board members that have really, that have direct relationships, very close relationships with funders that are not as, the odds aren't as stacked against you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for small nonprofits, that's usually your local foundation or your community foundation or a family foundation. Those are the kind of relationships you're going to see that'll probably go to the top of the list first. And then P.S., the more you get that kind of funding as a grounding, the more national funders will pay attention to you, because the first question that national foundations will often say is, do you get any local funding if you're a small local nonprofit?
Okay.
And if you don't, it is a red flag. They will say, well, come back to us when you can show that you actually have traction where you live first.
Right.
You know? So that's what I meant.
Okay. Excellent. You like the Foundation Center for grants research at this point, where we're finding out what charitable missions different different foundations are funding and who board members are? You like the Foundation Center libraries?
I'm a big fan of the Foundation Center. When I was a funder, we funded it. And they continue to be the place to go. And they've gotten much more sophisticated. They've had a turn in leadership, and the person who runs it, Brad Smith, is extremely technologically savvy, and they've really transformed it to a real state-of-the-art search engine. That being said, of course, now there's other search engines out in the world. I mean, you've got Google, and you've got, you know, all you have to do is Google something, and you've got GuideStar, you know, which has all the 990s available, which are probably your best resource in terms of seeing who that foundation has funded before and who's on the board and, you know, all those kinds of things. So, you know, there's a wealth of materials, but certainly the Foundation Center is a great resource.
Okay. And of course, they have their cooperating collections
exactly
throughout the country.
Exactly.
You know? And if you can get to a cooperating collection library, mm-hmm. it's absolutely free.
Right.
And there's always a librarian that's helping you.
Sure.
There to help you.
But it's always online too. And you can go right directly to the center and get the website and go to their resources pretty quickly.
Yeah. But okay. But then there's a, isn't there a subscription fee if you want
there
to?
There's bundles and packages that you can get. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. No. Mm-hmm. That was for me. No, you haven't been admonished. No. That was Sam gave a little hand signal, and Cindy's still feeling a little insecure. Apologizing. That was for me. What do we do when we get these one-off requests that aren't such a high priority? And it does come, let's say, from a volunteer, board member. Now, key, build it up and make it the worst-case scenario. A significant board member has suggested that we do go to the Hewlett Foundation or Ford or Great Gates or what something that's just not a good fit, whether it's enormous or not. It's not a priority. What do we say to him or her so that they feel their request has been honored, but isn't going to be immediately handled?
Right. Well, we say that's a really stupid idea and you're off the board. No. No.
Well, that was a different scenario that I did not set up.
That's going to depend on your relationship with the board member. But I think most board members, if you say to them, we really love the idea that you know these people. I mean, it is a really great thing if you've got a board member who's got an in to some real money on a foundation. But, you know, we really just have to take our time and pursue that relationship over a little bit longer time period until we build up our base of other funders that they're going to pay attention to. It's sort of what I just said.
Okay, you know. Going back to it. Yeah, so mm-hmm. we could make it a lower priority mm-hmm. that way.
Correct.
We've got to lay the groundwork before we can be But in the meantime,
they should be, you know, sure, sending an email, a little heads up and saying, you know, look, I'm on this board of this nonprofit and they're great. And I know you probably can't fund them now, but, you know, can we send you information or can we go to lunch and just sort of do an informational meeting? You know, again, I think it's all good. I think all of that, sending funders stuff, even though you know they're not going to read it, you never know. And I mean, you may assume they're not going to read it, but you never know. And just them seeing it across their desk periodically over and over again, they're going to start seeing your name and associating it with an organization that maybe they should pay attention to.
We got to go away for a couple of minutes. When we come back, Cindy Gibson and I will keep talking about your board on grants. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
I'm Christine Cronin, president of nycharities.org. You're listening to Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%.
Got lots of live listener love. Bangkok, Thailand. Olivos, Argentina. Welcome, Argentina. We don't get too many South American listeners. Welcome. And Seoul, South Korea. Anyo Hasayo. Hanoi, Vietnam. Welcome. We don't get too many from Vietnam, but occasionally you are with us. Glad you are. Coming back to the States. New Bern, North Carolina. Las Vegas, Nevada. Live listener love to you. Cindy Gibson, our new monthly contributor on grants fundraising. We're talking about the culture of fundraising on your board. I know you have a lot to say about the culture. What else would you like to see?
So I thought one of the things I wanted to mention is we always talk about how to get board members more involved and to strengthen the fundraising culture. But we very rarely talk about some of the challenges and the downsides of board involvement in some of this.
But you do want us to have our board involved.
Absolutely.
Okay. But there's
and I want to just throw a few cautionary notes in there.
Okay.
And one, of course, is that has been a subject of huge debate is whether foundation should sit on nonprofit boards. And that has been very, very controversial, but it's becoming a more common practice.
So this is when, let's set the stage, because not something that I'm aware of a lot. A foundation is funding your organization?
Could be just a foundation funder who can't fund you necessarily, but it likes your organization.
And asks to be on your board?
Or somebody nominates them.
Yeah, right. Okay, go ahead.
So this sort of came about as a bigger trend about 12, 15 years ago. And it sort of came out of the whole venture philanthropy world where business people were becoming more and more hands-on and wanted to be more and more involved in the things that they were funding through their foundation or through their individual giving, what have you. And they started asking to be on boards. And nonprofits, I think at first were, you know, thought, oh, this is a win-win. It's great. You know, we're going to get this big funder on our board.
Yeah.
But over time, some nonprofits came to see it as a hindrance because there were either huge conflicts of interest. Whenever a funder's in the room, no matter what setting it is, people tend to shine for the funder. They limited honest discourse sometimes in the boardroom, even though they were all supposed to be peers. Everyone was painfully aware that this person sitting on their board had the potential to give them money or knew lots of people with money and tell them things that were going on that they may not have wanted to share. In a personal story, when I was at a foundation, I had five nonprofits come to meet with me and say that they wanted to see if I and some other my funding peers could have an intervention with another funder who sat on two of the organization's boards and was so hands-on and dictating what this organization should do, but everyone on the board and the organization was afraid to speak up and challenge him because he funded them. So it's just a cautionary tale about, you might think that's a great thing at first, but you know, be careful with that.
Okay. Excellent. What happens when you get a no from we've done all our due diligence and even, let's say it was a board member connection, and we were turned down.
Well, that's always distressing, and it's hard not to take personally. But it's usually not. It's usually a number of reasons that you get turned down, and we all know that. But it's particularly difficult, I think, when you have a board member who is in a position of power already, and you have to go tell them that you were turned down and they were the ones who may have shepherded this through. You know, that board member has a personal relationship with whomever and the funder, and they're going to say what they need to say, you know, even if you're not there. They're going to have a personal conversation probably with their friend at the foundation and find out what went
sure.
wrong. But what I would say is to not look at that as a closed door necessarily, is to then work with the board member who has that relationship and go back to the funder who said no and say, well, can you do something else for us? Can you call up five other funders for us? Can you...
Oh, will they do that?
Sure.
Well,
I mean, good program officers will do that. They really do see that as part of their job. Or can you do a funders briefing for us? You know, can you host a lunch?
Wait, now we have Jargon Jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. And I'm sorry to incarcerate you on your second appearance, but first as a monthly. But it's easy to rehabilitate yourself. We have very easy rehabilitation and parole program. A funder's memo? What is that?
No. So this is just a briefing. Let's say
funder's briefing.
I want to do, I'm a nonprofit and I want to talk to other funders about my nonprofit. I could go to X foundation who turned me down and say, okay, you can't fund us, but you know, these five other funders, you know them as colleagues. Could you have a lunch at your foundation and invite your colleagues so we could present what we do to them?
Oh.
And it's a briefing. It's really not asking for money. It's just, here's what we do. Let's have a conversation. And you can even do it with two or three nonprofits, you know, have sort of a bigger event out of it. And I've actually done a lot of those, and I know lots of other funders have done that as well. And there, a lot of them are glad to do it. If you get the right nonprofits there and the right mix of funders, the conversation can be really great. I mean, it can be very rich because you start talking about the issues at large, you know, so.
Excellent. Right. But there's no money on the table necessarily.
Not necessarily.
It's just we're opening a door. Okay.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. And also that no is not the final answer. I mean, there are other funding cycles and there's going to be other years and opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you just have to say to them, is this a definite no or can we come back? I mean, you just really have to clarify.
Okay.
So,
next time you come on, you want to talk about what makes a good proposal, right?
Sure.
That sound all right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds great.
Okay.
Am I out of jail now?
Oh yeah, you were.
Okay.
Yeah, I told you. It's not hard to get out, but it's pretty simple to get in because I'm jumping at the chance to put people into Jargon Jail. Jumping. Cindy Gibson. Synthesis Consulting is her practice, CYNTHESIS, and you'll find her on Twitter at SynGib. I'm glad you're with us for month to month. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Next week, it is going to be accounting professor Brian Mittendorf about using numbers in your stories. And I promise you, we are not going to have a dull accounting lecture. We're going to start with finding out how it is that always assets equal liabilities. I would like the explanation of that from when I quit my accounting class at Carnegie Mellon University about 2 weeks into it. I want to know this magic of how assets equal always equal owner's equity plus liabilities. If he can explain that to me, I don't know what I'll do, but I'll be excited. So this is not going to be a dull accounting conversation. Using numbers in your stories, that's what we're going to talk about. Also, Maria Semple, our prospect research contributor, returns, and she's going to have some wisdom. Of course, she's our doyen of dirt cheap and free resources. Never lets us down there. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is by Julia Campbell of J. Campbell Social Marketing. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, helping me when I go to conferences and do remote interviews, John Federico of The New Rules. This music you're listening to, it's by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.